Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an interview with Jeff Kempeners, a top-ranking global executive, business strategist, and technology visionary. Today, we will focus on the whole area of collaboration. Jeff, you bring a lifetime of proven, world-ranking, international business and technology leadership to our audience. Considering your very heavy schedule, we thank you for doing this interview with us.
My pleasure, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
So, Jeff, as I mentioned, this discussion today is going to be about collaboration and, you know, the benefits of it, maybe some of the cons of it and so on. And I know that you recently conducted a major survey on collaboration. So can you profile the content of the survey first, its audience, intentions, and so on?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So we submitted and commissioned a survey to be conducted by Kelton Research, and in that survey we included 538 was our sample size. 538 C-level executives. They were generally business leaders and IT decision makers, and they were all members of the C-suite. And they spanned 17 different regions, including North America, Europe, Asia Pacific, and a variety of different categories, including aerospace, defense, financial services, media, telecom, logistics, healthcare, energy, government, etc. Quite a broad survey set indeed. And the purpose of the survey really was to give us an updated point of view and perspective around how organizations are viewing collaboration technologies and the impetus for change to allow for more advanced collaboration technologies. As you know, quite a lot has changed over the last couple of years, and moreover, we find that things are changing about every quarter or every 6 months when it comes to these perspectives, and so we just wanted a fresh point of view around what those decision makers are thinking with respect to collaboration.
You know, Jeff, you talk about collaboration, but to some people that term can be a little bit confusing because it's used for many different things to different people. So can you define what is meant by collaboration and how this ties into, for example, something like social media?
Sure. So the way we view collaboration in this context is really with respect to tools that help information workers and that help folks in the workplace do their job more effectively. That is to say, a means to collaborate from human to human, and occasionally for a means to allow that human-to-human interaction to span into a human-to-machine interaction. And I'll give you some examples of that a little later on if you'd like. But really what the gist of it is we see it as social media for the workplace. So rather than looking at the entire population of users on Facebook or LinkedIn or something like that, we're looking at the population of users who are members of our employee base inside of a specific organization. Or we're looking at the entire set of users who are members of our customer set or appear somewhere in our supply chain, trading partners, things of that nature. And then allowing those people to interact in a variety of different ways, really taking the interaction and moving it into a digitally enabled type of a space. Some of the things that we use to do that are what are sometimes called My Sites, which are inside of an employee network. You may have a portal that contains a page for each individual, and maybe they've got a little mini blog, and they've got their interests and, you know, the types of things that they do. They'll have all of their contact information, of course, but then they'll also have some description of their areas of expertise, some of the types of things that they do, you know, as core to their job, and then maybe some of the ancillary things that they do that are sort of secondary to their to their primary job. Things like, I serve on the IT oversight committee, or I serve on the birthday club, or whatever the case may be. And that allows employees the opportunity to find one another with like-minded interests, and also to collaborate with one another with the end goal, of course, of being to do your job more effectively.
So this really sounds interesting, and as you mentioned, it's kind of like social media within the organization itself. Is there some linkages to social media externally?
Oftentimes we find that is the case. Now this is going to depend from one organization to another, but we do certainly do implementations, and we're finding that depending on the type of organization, they have a lot of value in providing external links to public social media sites. And for example, organizations in retail, manufacturing, anything that has a touch point with an end consumer is going to be a lot more interested in that type of interaction versus organizations that potentially have higher you know, higher compliance and reporting related issues around who accesses what data where and for what purpose. Those organizations might be a little bit more guarded and would prefer that their employees only interact on the corporate sponsored websites and portals rather than going externally. Anything that has its purpose or its root sort of in marketing or in consumer-driven approach certainly does span into the Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook side of things quite a bit.
So can you then provide a bit of a history of collaboration, I guess starting with two people talking and maybe go from there?
Well, I think the first time two cavemen were grunting over a rock that started a fire and one of them said flint, right? I mean, we could go pretty far back to the birth of language, but just keeping it in the 20th and 21st century, I would say this really began with the telephone. At one point in business, we were sort of doing business where it had to be either face to face or people would type out these memos that would be broadly distributed, and then you had the telephone come to everybody's desk. And I suspect at the time, although I admit I wasn't around at the time, but I suspect at the time there were a lot of folks in the corner office who were quite concerned that having a telephone on every employee's desk was going to be a massive time killer, that productivity would suffer, that people would spend all their time just chatting with one another, and they did not at all embrace this newfangled technology called the telephone. And then, of course, we moved forward into the digital age. We started to see email. I was around for this transformation. I did see a lot of people arguing, aggressively arguing that giving an email box or an email inbox to every employee would be the downfall of the organization, that they would do nothing but, send each other personal memos all the time, and it would be a phenomenal time killer. As you remember, or as most everybody remembers, most of these have become sort of the core of our collaboration tools today. When we think of collaboration as baby boomers and Gen Xers, we think about things like the telephone, email, and potentially getting up and walking over to a cubicle, and having a face-to-face conversation. When we look at the generation next, or the millennials, as they've come to be known, the millennials see instant messaging, wall postings, blogs, all those types of sort of more modern but digitally enabled communication techniques as the best means to do collaboration. And so we're seeing a lot more people sort of demanding instant messaging in the workplace. They're looking for blogging in the workplace. They're looking for the ability to post ideas and have sort of, community wikis where people can share and collaborate concepts in a centralized location and build upon one another's body of knowledge to more effectively do their work together. Now the trick is these millennials will, of course, use the public internet of freely available hosting sites for this material if your company doesn't use it themselves. That is, if you don't have instant messaging, they're going to be on Live or on Yahoo or on, whatever the hot instant messaging client is. If you don't have a portal, they're going to be out on Facebook and LinkedIn. And so it really is important, as you look through the history, that we not make the mistake of assuming that just because it's a new technology that enables collaboration, that it will be a time killer. I think we've learned, through the past couple of revolutions in collaboration technology, that's not necessarily the case. And of course, it's important that we provide these tools to our employees.
So can you then quantify the measurable benefits to people from collaboration?
It's difficult to quantify exactly. I can quantify what it does to employee retention rates, for example, to employee satisfaction surveys. We've seen a strong collaboration, or I shouldn't use the word collaboration, we've seen a strong correlation between organizations that embrace these technologies and their ability to find and retain top talent. And moreover, we've seen a correlation between those that embrace these technologies and the quote-unquote top places to work lists that are published by a variety of different publishers. So it's interesting to note that, you can sort of quantify it from that perspective. As far as time quantification or some efficiency coefficient, some sort of productivity coefficient, that's not really something that we have enough data to get into a quantifying. However, I can say unequivocally that when you provide these tools to people and then give them a survey to say, would there be a negative business impact if we took them back, right? This is, to me, sort of the most interesting, I guess you could say, subjective way of measuring it, is launch a pilot program, give, you know, a department or two, maybe a couple hundred people, maybe 50 people, whatever, give them all of these modern tools in a pilot program. And then about 2 or 3 months later, ask the question, hey, is it okay if I take these back? The pilot's over and I'm going to turn everything back off again. You will see very, very quickly just how attached they've become to these tools. You get an overwhelming response that no. Now I see these tools as just important to my day-to-day life as my telephone and my email and the other things that I have in my bag of tricks.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of email, let's say 12 years ago or 10 years ago, and if you had an outage for a day, it was fine. You have an outage for a day today, and it's like chaos, right?
Yeah, indeed.
So what are the top collaboration tools today, and what surprised you from your recent survey?
So this was interesting. The top collaboration tools today, and I'm going to keep this Canada-specific rather than global, we had phone calls as 91% of well, let me read you the question first. Among the folks that we surveyed, we asked which of the following technologies did they consider, quote, essential to their business interactions. Now, we said this is in addition to email because we presumed that 100% of respondents would say email. I think that was a safe presumption. Phone calls, 91%. Teleconferencing and conferencing calls, 77%. Corporate portals and online team sites, 57%. Instant messaging, 49%. And none of those really came as too much of a surprise, but the one that really caught me unaware was a shared drive for saving documents. So this is a sort of an S drive or a network drive somewhere that folks can store documents on. 83% of Canadian respondents felt that this was mission critical to their organization to have and maintain a shared drive. Now, I will contrast that to 74% globally and significantly less than 74% in the U.S. portion of the survey responded that a shared drive for saving documents was mission critical. And what this leads me to believe as the sort of the principal surprise of the survey is that shared drives are still a lot more ubiquitous than we think. With all of their lack of document or folder layer security, with all of their lack of ability to audit, right, so there are compliance-related issues. There's a real problem with these. If you accidentally delete a document, you have to go to IT and do a backup from or a restore from a tape rather than, you know, the undelete features that are built into a lot of collaboration, document-centric collaboration sites today. You can check out and check in a document, revert it to a previous version of the document. You can, you know, branch versions of the document so that you've got, you know, sort of multiple versions out there and then remerge them later. I mean, there's a variety of sort of source control style features that have been applied to document-centric portals over the past 5 to 7 years that have really made these a very feature-rich replacement for the old S drive. And as I said before, my principal surprise of this survey is that there are still 83% of the respondents who believe that the S drive is mission critical. And that leads me to believe that there are a lot of folks who are late in the adoption, or potentially, that the tools associated with the web-based portal, document-centric portal, may be too cumbersome. It takes too many clicks for me to open up the browser, find the folder that I'm looking for, click on the document that I'm looking for, check it out, click on it again, say download it. Then I'm not really sure if I click the save button, whether it's saving it to my hard drive or whether it's saving it back up to the network drive. And when I'm done, maybe I forget to check it back in. And all of that seems a lot more difficult and cumbersome than just opening up Windows Explorer, or clicking on the S drive, and trolling into the folder that I'm accustomed to using. And so there's sort of a two-pronged answer to that, in my opinion. One is, here in Canada, I think we need to do a better job of helping the C-level folks understand the advantages of the document-driven portal. And moreover, I think we still have some work to do as IT consultants and implementers in making these things easy enough to use so that they're a natural replacement for the S drive rather than an artificial replacement.
Yeah, or perhaps all the layers of security associated with some kind of, you know, like a more ubiquitous tool. Maybe
that
creates barriers.
Yeah, yeah.
So how can organizations then justify the adoption of collaboration tools?
Well, I guess the best way to justify it is let's see, this is a difficult one to answer. The very best way to justify it is to remind yourself that people are going to do these things anyway, and it is a potential major security problem if you don't allow them to do it inside of the four walls of your IT organization. Now, I know the reason why I'm hesitant, Stephen, is because this is a it sounds like I'm fear-mongering to some extent in order to accomplish the goal of implementing things like secure instant messaging in the workplace and secure document portals in the workplace. But I'll give you an example. Right here at Avanade, our very own organization that we, you know, take a great deal of pride in as an IT, forward-thinking IT consultancy, back before we had our team site set up, and this was a number of years ago, of course, we didn't have a mechanism to do wikis inside of our own organization. And so a couple of folks, you know, very, you know, with all the best of intentions, set up a number of wikis around some of our pretty key intellectual property, actually, our very sort of core IP. And some of the documents and templates that, you know, we hold very near and dear, as well as some tools. And they put all those out on the public internet on a public-based wiki site, you know, with, of course, it was password protected, but the password was just Avanade, and whoever would have guessed that, right? And so here we are, you know, with a lot of our keys to the castle style intellectual property out on a public internet at a server in a location that we don't know where it exists, with a weak password that really anybody in the free world could guess relatively easily. And, you know, this was quite alarming when it was sort of socialized and when people came to realize that this had happened. And of course, one of the very next things was, why did this happen? And I think that the reason why it happened is because we hadn't provided ourselves the tools to do this internally yet. I would suspect that there's a lot of this going on today. I would suspect that there are a lot of sort of business-centric conversations happening over insecure instant messaging, potentially even over tools like Skype for some of the road warriors out there, which, you know, may or may not be secure depending on the circumstances. I think that there are a lot of folks out there who are doing, you know, collaboration and document sharing via things like, you know, via some of the public file drive style sites where they can share documents via public internet sites, even if it's temporary, even if they have all the intention in the world of going up to that file drive site and removing the document right after their colleague has downloaded it. The fact of the matter is they may or may not remember to do that. And so if we don't give them big enough inboxes to support 8 or 9 megabyte attachments, if we don't give them secure instant messaging to work with, if we don't give them the means to do a blog internally and to collaborate together with a wiki and to share documents with one another on a document-centric portal site that has security and logging and access and no size limitation and is nice and quick, if we don't provide them with those things, they're going to do those things anyway, but they'll use the public internet free tools to do so, and that I consider to be a pretty substantial security risk.
So then what are the challenges with collaboration and what are the concerns?
Well, the biggest challenge and concern that we heard during the course of the survey is folks who believe that a further enablement of collaboration tools will allow their information workers to delegate all of their responsibility and not do any real work. So let that sink in for a second. What they're really signaling there is, if I give my employees the means to collaborate with other employees who do the same job, then they will effectively delegate their responsibility to a variety of different people and will spend all of their time just sort of pushing tasks to others. Now, I don't know that I buy that argument, because in the workplace we really have sort of a zero-sum game. I mean, there's a finite amount of work that needs to be done by a finite amount of individuals. And, you can't have everybody delegating to everybody else and expect anything to get done. Now, of course, I think that's part of the fear, is if everybody tries to delegate to everybody else, then nothing will get done. But I don't necessarily think that that's the case. I think that there are a lot of people out there, I think we're underestimating people's motivations. I think there are a lot of people out there who want to be more effective in their job and in their career, who want to do things more efficiently, and who will certainly use those tools to the best of their ability to do so. But that was certainly the number one most prominent fear, was that there may be an opportunity for information workers to avoid or shirk responsibility or to delegate away all of their tasks to other people, thereby rendering them a paid employee for no purpose.
So how and why have organizational priorities changed, and then how will this change the work environment?
So over the last couple of years, organizational priorities have really shifted in two directions. Number one is a stronger adherence to compliance, right? So we're sort of seeing organizations are much more interested in making sure that they're Sarbanes-Oxley compliant, that they can fulfill an audit. And that audit could be a financial audit, it could be an IT risk audit, it could be a security audit, it could be any number of things. And I think that that's a key driver and also a key organizational shift. The other thing that's interesting is, we did two of these surveys just in the last year or so. One of them was conducted in September of 2009 and then the next one in March of 2010. Now what's interesting is the respondents had overwhelmingly pressure to save on costs and a high pressure to save on costs and a low pressure to innovate during the September of 2009 survey. And we found that flipped in the March of 2010 survey. We saw many more of our respondents had a pressure to innovate versus a pressure to save on costs. So this was an interesting organizational shift for us, and this was ubiquitous across the globe. This wasn't just Canada, although I would say that Canada had one of the more dramatic shifts among those surveyed. 100% of Canadian respondents report their company's rate of new technology adoption has remained steady or increased, compared to 92% of respondents globally. So 100% of Canadian respondents since September of 2009 have found that their rate of new technology adoption has either remained steady or increased. Now, that's a dramatic difference if you look at the late 2008, early 2009, and even some of the late 2009 surveys, where the rate of technology adoption had slowed dramatically in order to respond to the pressure to save on costs. Also, 80% of respondents say that recent economic turmoil has caused their company to become more open to new technologies. So the economic turmoil has moved from batten down the hatches, tighten the belt, pick your metaphor here, and let's survive this storm. We've moved that mindset now that we're quite a bit further along into a potential recovery. We've now moved that mindset into we really need to innovate. We really need to create some new value in order to do more in the new normal, in order to take what we've got today in terms of IT resources, budget, headcount, etc., and still allow our business users to grow the business, to add new revenue. So the efficiency discussion really has been left behind, and now it's more, well, maybe not efficiency, the cost cutting has been left behind in favor of efficiency and growth, and there is now a lot of pressure to innovate coming in from the C-suite onto the IT department.
So that's quite a golden opportunity, isn't it?
I would think so. It's a golden opportunity for everybody. Now, it's also, with great opportunity comes some degree of risk as well. We'll have to see how this plays out because, like I said, it is an attempt to operate inside of the paradigm of the new normal, or what many people are calling the new normal. That is to say, for many years we said, let's do more with less. Let's keep the IT budget the same or shrink it while still asking folks to do more. This was sort of a little bit of a disruptive event, this economic downturn of 2008 and 2009, and that disruptive event has really forced our hand at doing more with less. And it'll be interesting to see how companies who are able to innovate aggressively, whether that is, whether there's a point of diminishing returns on the innovation curve. If you are the absolute leading edge, most aggressive innovator, did you get that much more as a return on your investment than those who choose to moderately innovate? I would certainly advocate that those who choose not to innovate will be much further behind than anyone else. But yes, I do agree. It's a very interesting opportunity, and certainly an opportunity to help some companies innovate their way of doing things while also, you know, keeping tabs and measuring what's the sweet spot. You know, how far should you take this? How early on the adoption curve should you be? And to what degree should you innovate?
So where do you see this whole area heading in 2 to 5 years?
Well, I think 2 to 5 years, looking more on the 5 year side of thing, I think that a lot of these technologies will really be ubiquitous by then. I think the piece that we have chosen not to discuss today, but which will become extremely interesting, is mobility-based devices. So as we move more and more toward things like the iPad, and mobile phones and Blackberries and whatnot become more and more more and more smart and more enabled. And, you know, the touchscreen in your car and the touchscreen, you know, the touchscreens that you have sitting all around your house and your laptop and your mobile phone and so on, as that computational power and those user input devices become more and more ubiquitous, I think you're going to see a higher and higher demand for instant collaboration among people. They're going to want instant gratification. They're going to want the instant answer to the question as they think of the question, rather than jotting it down in a notebook and waiting to call their colleague or email their colleague the next morning. And so I think 5 years out, we're going to see that sort of device conversion come along with collaboration in some very interesting ways. In the 2 to 3 year range, I think we're really just going to see companies playing catch up quite a bit. They're going to be enabling presence awareness. They're going to be dabbling in things called communications-enabled business processes, which is not necessarily a full, you know, recomposure of your business processes, but rather just sort of a mild rewrite or a little bit of a tweak to your business process in order to enable a presence aware and a communications enabled based process. I think we'll see quite a lot of that. I think we'll see more and more of the adoption curve move toward secure instant messaging and document centric portal based collaboration sites. And those will become really sort of the standard. That'll be kind of the table stakes for mature organizations. And then, as I said, you know, from years 2 through years 5, they'll be dabbling in communications-enabled business processes. And as that communications-enabled business process, or CEBP, starts to really, force the issue on people being always on, then we're going to see the device convergence start to come in order to enable that better, so that you don't always have to have your laptop fired up, or you don't always have to have your mobile phone in your pocket.
So it's interesting that, you know, I did an interview with Kishore Swaminathan and some really quite interesting ideas from that scientist. And I know he's the chief scientist of Accenture, and he's the founder of your technology labs of Accenture. And I know there's some relationship between Avanade and Accenture. Do you use some of his research?
We do, actually. And Accenture's technology labs is actually something that's quite near and dear to me. I don't know if your listeners or if you're aware, but Avanade is actually about 75% to 80% owned by Accenture. So we are actually an affiliate organization of Accenture in some degree. We also are partly owned by Microsoft and partly owned by ourselves. So we are an independent organization, but, you know, the ties back to Accenture are pretty clear. We use some of Accenture's labs technologies in pretty interesting ways. And I think one of them that is the most interesting to me is something that Accenture calls Sable Search, which is, really using some of the more advanced search technologies in order to give you a more immersive search experience. It's probably worth a full hour discussion, and I won't do it justice in the 30 seconds that I attempt. But really, what we're doing here is we're attempting to make the search experience a lot more user friendly, so that you're looking at previews of documents as icons on the screen. As you click on them, you sort of zoom in on them. You find that rather than a list of links with document titles and short descriptions, that people can find what it is they're looking for phenomenally faster if they have sort of graphical representations of those documents or PowerPoint presentations. And then as they zoom or click or pan through them, they identify the one that they actually want, and then they click it and they start a download. So all of this is sort of done behind the scenes by the search indexer that's actually taking medium to low res JPEG images of each page of the document and presenting the search results as images rather than as text. And I think that that's a pretty interesting advancement that Accenture Labs has put forth. They also have something called their Innovation Grapevine, which is really sort of an interesting tool that allows people to put forth ideas. Other people then add to those ideas. It's sort of a wiki, but people are collaborating around a specific initiative. Again, I wouldn't do it justice to spend just 30 seconds on it right now, but suffice it to say that these folks over at Accenture Labs are doing some pretty interesting things, and we do, of course, take any of the ideas and the IP that's generated from that, and particularly in ways that can really innovate some of our top-tier customers, and we certainly do help Accenture take those to market and sometimes take them to market ourselves.
So, anyhow, I'm really curious, right? You sort of described this mobility aspect, and you know, I assume that ties into cloud computing, and you talked about the user experience moving out, let's say, 5 years. Can you then describe what that user experience will be in the future?
It seems to me that we will go device independent, and we will add sort of a stateful nature to our devices. And I know I use some gobbledygook speak right there, so let me clarify. When I log into one of my home PCs or to my home laptop or my work laptop or some other machine here in the office, I have a much different desktop experience that pops up each time. I mean, sure, maybe I've got a user ID on each of those so that it looks different from my other colleagues or it looks different from my wife or my son's profile, but nevertheless, I have different icons on the desktop. I have different applications installed. I have different information and tools available to me depending on where I've logged in. So what I mean by adding state is, ideally, if I log into my home machine, I would like to tell it, do I want you to load me up in my home state or my work state or maybe my travel state or any number of other states? It still knows it's Jeff, but it now knows Jeff wants access to all of his work-based tools, all of his work-based applications, all of his work-based portals and links and sort of his work profile. Now, in the past, we've tried to call this things like roving profile or portable profile or login anywhere. I mean, there have been a number of tools that have attempted to enable this. There are even some niche market players out there that do it with things like, go to my PC and Citrix, of course, is an enabler of this type of thing, particularly for the workplace. But what I'm really talking about here is no matter what the device, whether it's an iPad-like device as I sit on the couch, or whether it's my big, home PC in the den, or whether it's, a home laptop because I happen to be on vacation but I just want to check something real quick, I would like the ability to have a cloud-based profile that understands the full state of my login, of my tools, my documents, my processes, everything about what I do both at work and at home. And I would like to tell that device, again, device independent. I don't want it to care whether I'm on an Apple or a PC or whether it's a BlackBerry or a Windows Mobile or an Android. I would like to tell it what state do I wish you to enter, and that device will enter that state. And my user experience then to some degree matches the experience that I would get in my office if that's the state that I wish to load, even though I may be sitting in a hammock at a resort in Aruba at the time. That's obviously my best case scenario. Let's reconsider. But I guess that's really where I'm coming from, the mobility and the ubiquitous nature is even if it's on the touch screen that is loaded up in your car, or even if it's, the screen that's in the seat back on the airplane, or whether it's on your iPhone or your iPad or whatnot, I want to see that user experience really converge and load up a stateful behavior of what it is I want that device to be, rather than sort of tweaking that device to portal or tunnel in to some other server somewhere that's waiting for me to log in, which is the way that the Go to My PC and the Citrixes and the terminal services types things work today.
I'm sort of thinking again about this user experience and now going back to this idea of collaboration. And I was just viewing some videos yesterday on Project Natal, which is going to be released this year. Is some of that going to move into the business space?
You have to assume it will. I mean, consumerization has been, and this, you know, this is an interesting trend, Stephen, as I'm sure you're aware. It really is only the last 12 to 15 years where consumerization or consumer-driven technology changes have forced the workplace. You know, when people started coming to work saying, I have a better internet connection at home than I have at the office, then all of a sudden everybody had internet at the office. When people came in and said, I have access to better search tools at home and better instant messaging at home, and my Gmail box has a gigabyte and my work inbox only has 100 megabytes. So consumer-driven demands are what it, a lot of what we talked about earlier, particularly, you know, with the millennials asking for things, in the workplace as they're becoming not only a prominent force, but are starting to become real leaders in our organizations. I think that that consumerization trend will absolutely continue for the foreseeable future. I really can't see a stop to it anytime soon.
Yeah, I was just sort of struck by the fact that, you know, this Project Natal sensor sort of camera system can do a full body sort of image of you, and you can communicate kind of full body with somebody else, and you can interact with your environment and pull objects in and move them aside, but just your natural gestures without using, you know, like a handheld device or using a keyboard or anything like that. Seemed very natural to me.
It is, and it's really cool stuff. I mean, of course, we're a few years away from that being affordable enough to where we'll see it go ubiquitous, but I think people are really more and more trying to create an experience that doesn't require that. Let me rephrase that. People are trying to find an experience where telepresence or virtual presence really is achievable. And even if you just look at the last couple of years, you've seen, you know, Cisco and Tanager and a number of others all come out with, you know, very, very high-end, high-definition, HP's Halo is another example, telepresence devices that use multiple HD cameras, multiple HD viewing screens, similar lighting and coloring in each room, exact positioning of the cameras, you know, in distances, and very, very, very high bandwidth and throughput so that you have no lag time, no pixelation, no lips moving without the sound coming or anything like that. And I've actually experienced telepresence sessions where you feel like you want to walk over to the video screen and shake its hand. And that's because you actually feel like you've met the person. And I've collaborated with colleagues over telepresence that then I've met face to face later, and we really feel like we've actually met one another. And that's a very, very interesting way to do business. And I think it's a natural matter of time before we see all of that really come into the workplace. I think it really just comes down to price for performance and is it affordable? And as it becomes more and more affordable, we'll see it become more and more ubiquitous.
You know, it's interesting. I was talking to another consultant, Adam Cole, and he talked about we could learn a lot about the gaming industry or from the gaming industry in terms of how they develop products, the processes that they use, and there could be an adoption, a movement from that area into business because many of the principles they use and best practices would work very well in the organization. And I thought, yeah, he's probably right.
It's very funny. I've got a funny story to share. We had a project that was multi-site. We had, you know, some of the on-site professionals were here in the Canada area and in the Canada region. And then we had some developers who were working out of Mumbai, India. And we had some difficulty with our what we call MOC or Microsoft Office Communicator phone call system. So for whatever reason, the number of hops that it was taking for them to get to the voice mediation server was too great. Anyway, I won't bore you with the technical details, but the way that we solved this, and it was rather ingenious, was everybody got on Xbox Live and joined a big, I think we used a racing game. I don't remember because it was at least 4 or 5 years ago. We may have used a racing game. We may have used a first-person shooter. I don't recall. But we all joined the same game, and we had our conference call via Xbox Live because we could all hear each other in perfect fidelity and with perfect clarity, which is sort of an interesting, interesting and creative use of the technology. But I think you're dead on. We could learn a lot when we started thinking in terms of how do we get everybody in the same place at the same time. We started thinking about, well, how do the virtual worlds do it? You know, how does Second Life and Xbox Live and all of those types of things, how do they accomplish this sense of community, this sense of common presence toward a common goal? you know, without people being in the same place really ever in their lives? How do we recreate that in the workplace? And I agree, we have a lot to learn from the gaming industry there.
Yeah, and perhaps when Project Natal comes out later this year, and it seems quite affordable, then I can see corporations actually buying it.
I hope so. I mean, I could see it going into pilot, you know, pretty quickly at some forward-thinking organizations. Like I said, I really think it's going to take some manufacturing advancements and getting past the very early adopters to the point where the price point comes down and people really start grabbing a hold. So
how can organizations best prepare in this whole collaboration area?
Well, I think the best thing to do is don't ignore the demands of today. You know, this whole computer fad, right? You know, like, I'm sure that there are some people who are thinking, boy, I can't wait till this whole computer fad is over. Well, it's not going to happen. I mean, you know, let's be real here. The digital age is here to stay. It's only going to move forward. Attempting to ignore things like instant messaging for your employees or collaboration tools for your employees and hope that it's a fad that 5 or 6 years from now you won't have to worry about anymore because it's moved on. It's a fool's paradise. You really need to embrace the technologies that your employees are demanding today. You need to go ahead with adoption, make the technical decision, do the implementation, do it right, and then take a look at some forward-looking concepts. You know, the best thing you can do to prepare for all of this is make sure that your Active Directory or identity and access management environments are really, you know, nice and neat. Identity is very, very important when it comes to collaboration. Because if we're contacting, you know, somebody named John Smith, how many John Smiths are there in a very large organization? You know, how do those systems know that you're reaching the right John Smith? You know, what Active Directory extensions need to be included? Can you run in mixed mode? You know, or does it require native mode? You know, like I said before, what extensions need to be included so that we can get all of the organizational data inside of that AD platform so that we know for sure that the person that we're contacting is the right person. So I'd say, you know, getting ready for it means cleaning up your identity environment and your AD environment and making sure that it's really sort of modern. And then take the plunge. You know, get to the stuff today. Get to secure instant messaging. Get to minimal presence awareness. You know, set up the portal with the document site. You know, let employees do their document mini sites and their my sites and their blogs and so on. And then, you know, a year from now, take a good hard look at it and decide, you know, what do you want to enhance substantially? What do you want to just sort of let run? And there may even be one or two technologies that you choose to allow to retire, depending on how it fits your organization. But I would say that the time to act and the time to innovate is certainly now.
You know, just thinking of this next question, and that is, why should IT managers care? But I'm thinking that they're going to be driven by their user base, because that's the expectation of their users. They expect this sort of, you know, very easy access collaboration, and like you said, if they don't get it internally within their organization, they're just going to do it elsewhere or outside the organization. We have less control.
It's absolutely true, and as you know, as more and more people who do get it start to become leaders and enter positions of authority and power, those who choose not to get it, you may get it, but you may choose not to, are going to be cast aside. They're going to be overlooked. They're going to, you know, the really smart IT professional who absolutely gets it and is able to set up sort of a skunk works project that fulfills the needs of everybody. Next thing you know, they're going to be the IT manager. You know, so part of being a leader in the IT world is not fearing change. You know, that's like it or not, that's the career that we're in. There are many of us who fear change in our personal lives. Maybe we fear change, you know, in the world political movements. But the fact of the matter is, we need to put on our brave big boy pants when it comes time to look at our jobs. Because in IT, you cannot fear change and survive for long. You have to embrace it. You have to move forward. And that's really what we're signaling today is it's time to do this innovation, because you will be cast aside by those who do if you don't choose to do it yourself now.
You know, I've done a series of interviews with a number of researchers and thought leaders and top business people and scientists, and all of them are pretty well uniform. In fact, everybody has said that this is where it's all moving, and it's here today, and it's going to be even bigger tomorrow. So you really have to stay in step with this sort of movement worldwide.
Absolutely, and I can't say it loudly enough. I mean, when I have this conversation, I always ask the question with somebody who really, really doesn't believe. I always ask the question, well, how much longer do you think this whole computer fad is going to last then? You know, 5 or 6 years from now, we'll go back to calculators and dumb smartphones and typed memos and so on. Or don't you think as really everybody else does, that these are technology habits that are here to stay, and this will continue to evolve and move forward? And doesn't it make sense to embrace it? It's not going to go away, and there's no sense in pretending that it will.
Now, can you share at least one story that illustrates the areas that we discussed earlier?
So which of the areas specifically would you like to hear about?
Just collaboration in general, maybe a case study or a particular example of a client and how it's just really made a difference.
Sure. So, you know, can't mention any names specifically, but a large global organization recently embraced a lot of this technology. They're based out of Germany, but they have locations all around the world. And in the course of embracing this technology, they went ahead and implemented a great many of these things. So, you know, the communicator-to-communicator based voice calls, video conferencing, and in addition to secure instant messaging and document collaboration and so on. And they really sort of went whole hog in it. What they found, and this is oftentimes held up as one of the reasons to do better collaboration, is you may reduce your travel expense. Well, this is a large multi-billion-dollar global organization. And they did save over $12 million in their first quarter. Their first quarter of the pilot in travel alone. Now, I have a hard time with that statistic because it was also at the beginning of the economic turndown, and so my suspicion is that there's a great deal of that came from let's not travel unless it's absolutely necessary. But the alternative that they used to travel nearly 100% of the time were these new collaboration tools that were put in place. So it's a bit of a chicken and egg scenario, Stephen. It's hard to say for sure what was the precipitating force that caused them to stay home and use the collaboration tools. Was it the economic turndown and they happen to have these great tools, therefore let's do it? Or was it, wow, we've got these great tools, oh, and it's expensive these days, so let's do it? It's hard to say which was in the foreground and which was in the background. I would like to believe that, you know, the availability of the tools and people's desire to maintain a more sort of work-life, home-life balance in their lifestyle were the two precipitating factors, and then the fact that the economy had turned down was what made it an easier decision. But I know that there are certainly people out there who would argue it the other way, and I think, you know, it's hard to say who's right there. But they, you know, that's a big example is, you know, saving lots of money on travel. In addition, you know, they also found that like-minded individuals were in touch with one another halfway around the world. People who had similar job functions were able to identify a variety of areas where they were doing very unusual things to their clients. So this was also combined with a customer relationship management system, and they found that they had been giving different price quotes to the same client depending on which location the client had asked for the quote. So these are global companies servicing other global companies, and let's say, fictitious example, let's say I'm asking for 100,000 plastic bottles, and I ask you for those in Germany, and then I ask you for those in France, and then I ask you for those in Texas. If the Texas price, and all to be delivered to Madrid, they're going to take the price that's the best, right? Now, at the end of the day, me as the supplier, I may actually, you know, take that production run from my Madrid facility and use my Madrid delivery, but I have a different price quoting engine depending on each location around the world. And these guys, using their collaboration tools, discovered that they were doing very unnatural things and that their trading partners, and in some cases their clients, were taking advantage of that, that they were seeking multiple quotes for the same fulfillment through different arms of the organization and then selecting the best quote accordingly. Now, sometimes that's to your advantage as well, right? If you're able to collaborate across a broad group of people And of course, in this case, the reason why they were being taken advantage of is because their customer had a better collaboration tool than they did, and they were able to say, everybody get a quote for this, and then everybody would get a quote and share it, and then they'd pick the lowest quote and place the order through that, through that division of the organization, through that region of the organization. Well, now that this large global provider also has great collaboration tools, they're able to better monitor when they're having, a heavy price competition on a specific product in a specific market, and then they get a request for fulfillment from an external market. They maybe don't use that market's, that market's lower price, but rather give a consistent price across all markets. I think I mixed words a little bit there. I may have confused you a little bit, but suffice it to say that there are lots of natural, almost intangible benefits that get uncovered after some brief period of time. And really the biggest illustration of that is the simple question of, if I took these tools away, would you be as effective, more effective, or less effective? And you get a borderline mutiny on your hands when you pose that question.
Okay, so you have organizations that can see the value of employing collaboration technologies. You see this trend in your survey where it's kind of flipped, where organizations are not so concerned about cost savings now. It's more about innovation, being agile, being competitive, because that's the nature of the world today. So where can they find out more? What are the best resources in this area?
Well, I think a couple of good places to start. Go ahead and hit Accenture's website, hit Avanade's website. There are probably a number of links on SIPS, which is the Canadian SIPS is Canadian Information Process. Could you spell it out for me, Stephen? I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, the Canadian Information Processing Society.
Processing Society. I didn't want to get it wrong, although I was pretty sure that's what it was. Has some interesting links out there. Another really great place to start for information is engage your top tier vendors. Talk to Microsoft. Go ahead and talk to Sun or IBM if you're deeply involved with them. Certainly they're going to have something to sell you, and so make sure that you've got a balanced point of view from multiple different vendors. But you're always going to get an interesting vendor perspective on that as well. And I would say, most importantly, and this is I've saved the best one for last, is talk to your employees. Talk to your new hires, anyone who's joined your workforce over the last, anywhere from 1 to 5 years. Get a championing group together, get them together, discuss what would you guys like to see, what would you like to hear, what tools do you wish you had, where, when, and how do you go outside of our network environment in order to collaborate more effectively, and how can we help you recreate that internally? Your very best resource are the young men and women who grew up with these things, who use them extensively in university, and who wish to use them extensively inside your organization, and they're going to have the very best ideas on how to run a communications-enabled business, and you should tap into that if you've got it at your disposal.
Can you provide an update of your work involving global certification and professionalism programs?
Sure. So, as you're probably aware, Avanade is involved in a number of these different types of groups all around the world. The one that we focus on here in Canada is called SIPS, as I think we mentioned a little bit earlier, or CIPS. One of the things that Avanade also likes to do is keep the highest percentage of certified employees on our chosen technology platform, which for Avanade is the Microsoft technology stack. So we constantly seek Microsoft certified architect certifications. We're constantly striving to improve our Microsoft certified professional developer, solution developer, and certified architect and systems administrators and systems engineers and so on. So all the MCSE, MCSA and so on, accreditations. We work very hard to make sure that we've got as many or more of them in each of our markets than any of our competitors. Moreover, we really like to look at certifying our processes as well. So this is where you see things like different IEEE certifications, PMP style certifications. Well, at any rate, the point is that, you know, we do our best in order to make sure that we stay engaged in these organizations. And the reason is because we want to avoid the bubble think concept. It's easy for any, you know, sort of highly skilled group of individuals to start to believe that their way is the very best way to do things. We certainly want to make sure that we don't fall into that trap ourselves. That sort of groupthink or bubblethink mentality is a lot of what's wrong with politics. It's a lot of what's wrong with very, very large organizations who don't seek external input. And so as a result, we really do like to stay closely connected to organizations like SIPS and organizations like the others I mentioned around the world, in order to make sure that we we're sort of gut checking what we're up to, that we get some external thinking, some external eyes on what we're doing, and just sort of keep a fresh perspective on things in general.
Well, Jeff, you know, it's been a great discussion here today, and I can just see all the advantages of collaboration, and, you know, the whole environment is really about collaboration. It's just going to get richer and richer, and the user experience better and better, and easier and easier. That's just the way it's going to happen. It's just the law of IT and the law of business today. So, you've given us some many points of entry into collaboration. You've given us sites where we can get more information about it, where as an organization we can start implementing this if we haven't implemented it already, or we can move to a higher adoption or a deeper penetration of collaboration tools. So I really appreciate you taking the time to do this interview, and we'll continue to follow your significant contributions, Jeff. You're a mover and shaker, you're a top thought leader, and again, we thank you for coming in and sharing your insights with us.
My pleasure, Stephen, as always. And just briefly before we go, I remembered it's CMM, the Capability Maturity Model. So of course, you know, we make sure that we're measuring our capability maturity model level and so on. But yeah, wanted to say thanks again for your time. It really always is a pleasure to speak with you. It's an opportunity for us all to sort of get some thoughts out in the open and share what we think and what we know. And I'll be looking forward to hearing from you in the future.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Jeff Kempeners, a top-ranking global executive, business strategist, and technology visionary. Today, we focused on the whole area of collaboration and its benefits.